Argue, argue, talk, 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 exaggerate, argue, pontificate, argue, just talk, shut talk, up. Why won't you listen? Argue, why won't you see? I know the story, just listen to me.
You're better off when you're spouting off. And now, here's your host, Karen Cataline.
And welcome. Good afternoon, no matter where you are. You're tuned to BBS Radio Station 1. Welcome to Spouting Off. It's Tuesday, June 5th, 2018. That's when we're taping this, and that's when it's live. So if you would like to call in, you can do that at 888-627-6008. Or 323-744-4831. I have a spiffy show. I wonder if anybody uses that word anymore. I have a spiffy show for you today. I am so jazzed to have with us. He's going to be with us just a little bit later in the program, although I'll probably get to him sooner because I know he has a lot to say and I have a lot to ask him. C.J. Pearson, a high school student. He's not even 16, and he's had a million hits on his videos. This is a kid you want to listen to for a whole host of reasons. High school kids are getting thrown out there into the public. One of my theories is that as adults keep acting more like children, we keep thrusting children into adulthood. Not a good thing in my estimation, but with people like C.J. Pearson, he can counteract a lot of the silliness. And I'll bet he has the kind of modesty, too, that helps us understand that he wants to learn more like the rest of us. Very, very divided country today. I've got comments to spout off about. I've got issues to spout off about today, and I want to get to them right away, and then we'll get to our great guest, C.J. Pearson. First, I want to let you know that I woke up this morning to find out that my piece in American Thinker was picked up. It's funny. In this particular case, they didn't even tell me. I just woke up, and there it was. But I was delighted because this is a piece that is about the kind of stuff that I've been talking about here, right around here in this program quite a bit. The title of the piece is How Will the Me Too, well, actually word for word, How Will Me Too Affect the Midterms? The reason it's so important to me, one moment. The reason it's so important to me, I do have a cough button, it's great. I sometimes don't use it though, is because it does indeed affect the midterms and there's a lot of information here. I spoke about it a lot last week, but even in my research, in talking about, putting this piece together, it takes me forever to write these. That's why I don't write a lot of these pieces unless there's something that I think is critically important. And I think that the fact that, and this is breaking news from last week, that there are in fact 18 states in this country that have had sexual abuse, sexual harassment, I should say, allegations. Before that, there was not even a report for this sort of thing. I'm not going to go through the piece because I have other things to talk about, but it is very important to me. That's why I went to the trouble of writing this piece in the American Thinker. All you got to do is go to AmericanThinker.com, put my name in, because it'll probably be on the front page today, June 5th, 2018. It's there right now. But as they continue to put more stuff up on American Thinker, on the blog and on the article page, it'll start to get buried, but you can pull it up quickly. And I'm hoping that some news aggregators will pick it up. Not because I want any glory. I just think this thing is so darn important that we need to, the conclusion of which is that we need to put conservative women out front to counter the false and dangerous narrative of the Me Too movement. And so I lay it out there pretty clear in as concise a fashion as I thought I could. I live in a state that continually makes the news with stories like we had an expulsion in the state House of Representatives. There's been one in Arizona. And this story is, these stories are not going away. How it affects the Me Too movement has everything to do with what the left is planning for us. So there are ways to counteract this. And what it requires is that even some of my very good friends in talk radio and elsewhere, if they happen to be male, they're not as comfortable talking about these issues as women are. Why? Because there's been a lot of bullying going on here. And it is up to conservative women to start speaking up about this Me Too movement. You are not, just like the issue I'm going to get into, you're not against women if you speak up against the Me Too movement. You speak up against the Me Too movement because it's bad for everyone. There's no discernment. There's no due process. It's being used as a political football, and I do lay that out pretty clearly. Hoping that it'll get picked up, as I said, by news aggregators. If you know someone that you think would find this piece important, I don't generally do this, but there's enough facts in this story that I think it's important to get out there. 1 year, there's nothing. The next year, there are 18 states in which the Democrats are trying to remake state governments all over the country. I don't think it can be simply explained by the Harvey Weinstein story that just never goes away. In fact, it's going to be with us for a year to come or more. He just pleaded not guilty, and we'll watch that story. Conservative women support due process. Okay? I could go on an hour about that piece, but it's important to me, and I want you all to read it and comment on it. Write to me if you have thoughts or comments or ideas. The piece is posted up at my website as well, www.KarenCataline.com. You probably know how to spell that, but the last name is K-A-T-A-L-I-N-E. Okay, next issue on the docket is just a couple of comments about this next story. Gretchen Carlson, who has been on Fox News quite a bit on television, Fox News Television, announced today that the Miss America pageant is getting rid of its bathing suits. And in one report, I heard that they were getting rid of evening gowns as well, and that they're going to stop. They're going to turn the Miss America pageant into more of test of character rather than appearance. They're not going to do anything with appearance. I'm laughing because my whole book, actually my book was about a lot of things, but it was about my experience in child beauty pageants. So I have a few things to say about beauty pageants. First off, it is 100% different when you have beauty pageants for children and you're sexualizing them as if they are adults. For me, the boundary is the age of consent. We need to protect children. But the very idea that you're going to turn the Miss America pageant, which into some kind of contest of merit, is rather laughable. Are they going to start having overweight 67-year-old 14-year-old. I mean, people of very, very average appearance competing in the Miss America pageant, their ratings will go to zero in no time at all. What this is, ironically, and follow me here, because I think the Miss America pageant is stupid, but they're trying to be relevant in the age of this phony Me Too movement. And all they're doing is digging a hole deeper and deeper and deeper. Follow me here. So in order to make this silly pageant relevant, they're going to be superficial about superficiality. You get that? Wow. So now they want to give the appearance that they don't care about appearance, when really they care about appearances just as much as ever. So I plan to ignore the whole thing, because there's some brilliant, brilliant women in this world who probably would never win a beauty pageant. Okay? And beauty, if you're going to do that, then why don't you have an IQ pageant or something? The whole thing is silly. Yes, women have been sexually objectified in this culture for decades and decades and decades. And so to turn the Miss America pageant into suddenly some kind of merit pageant or contest is utterly silly, because you might have to have someone like, I was just trying to get a hold of Clarice Feldman. Clarice Feldman is a writer for American Thinker. Lots of brilliant women who aren't necessarily physically attractive. Hey, I used to weigh a whole bunch when I was in high school, like, you know, 285 pounds. And I realized the reality of having to deal with not being socially acceptable in certain circles. Today, the socialists are trying to take away every ounce of reality known to man, which is why it brings me to the next subject, the real main subject that I wanted to mention and at least spout off about before I welcome our guest, CJ Pearson. I am a native of Denver, Colorado, proud of it. I lived away for 20 years, but I am back in Colorado and do a lot of work in Wyoming as well. And so I follow Colorado politics pretty closely. And so the masterpiece cake decision that came down yesterday, 7-2 in favor of Jack Phillips and the Masterpiece Bakery, is an important case to me, and it should be important to you too. We've followed this case through talk radio and various different personalities for more than 5 years. I've met Jack Phillips, except only briefly. I went to his bakery for a little support protest, whatever. I know people that have been buying cakes from him every month since this case began, because he had to stop baking wedding cakes altogether because of the bullying, because of the cruelty, because of the insanity of the left. You don't see all the facts of the story, and I don't have time to lay out every bit of the facts, but here's a couple of them. The left has been trying to spin that the 7-2 Supreme Court decision was, as they have put, someone put out a memo, narrow. It was a narrow decision. That's what they wanted us to believe. Nonsense. They want us to believe, they don't care if people think it was narrow because it was, you know, only one Supreme Court justice, which of course it was not, that came our way. You had Elena Kagan and Kennedy and the other judge escapes me for the moment. It's not in front of me. Who Kagan and the other judge that escapes me are reliable liberals, and yet they saw the wisdom. That's why we got a 7-2 decision. What you don't know, it hasn't been proven, but this little bakery is a hole in the wall. You would not be able to find it unless you knew it was there. There was a lesbian couple that came in the week before, and they got the same answer, which is, I will sell you cakes, I will sell you cookies, I'll sell you anything you want, but I cannot, will not make a custom wedding cake for your gay wedding. I don't make Halloween cakes either. So the left, in its constant desire to misreport facts in order to demonize anyone that disagrees with them, tried to make Jack Phillips out to be some kind of a Nazi, some kind of a radical hater. And the hate was all coming from these two guys who shopped that cake store because they knew a Christian owned it. Now, can I prove that? No. But it's hard not to think so, since the administrative law judge, who was never elected, was the one who was sitting at the ready. They actually, before this case got to the Supreme Court, Jack Phillips had been ordered pretty much to do a re-education camp to educate him about why he was just so bigoted. Now, who's the bigot here? This case is important because it protects all of our freedoms. It protects freedom for all of us. I am reminded of a time on this very network when I was a guest on another political show, very liberal host and his co-host, where the moment I mentioned the Masterpiece Cake Shop case, which had just been presented, so it's what, 9 months ago, 8 months ago, whatever it was, and the moment I mentioned the case, the hosts lost their minds, because to them, the very notion that you would turn away a gay couple to bake their custom wedding cake seemed patently obvious, that Jack Phillips was a mean old Christian. They didn't seem to care about the facts in the case. They didn't seem to care about anything other than gays are always victims. Christians are those who disapprove of gay marriage, must always be the intolerant ones. That is the Hollywood narrative. That is the narrative they've been feeding us forever. And if I do anything with this show that I love so much, that I love doing so much, it is to try to encourage people to think for themselves. You know, and consider each case, each and every case, for the facts in the case. What I see as similar between the Masterpiece Cake Shop case and the article that I wrote for American Thinker is that the left is constantly trying to make a narrative in which certain groups are always given a pass because of their ethnic or other identity. This is all the left has, is identity politics. That's why C.J. Pearson and Candace Owens and Diamond and Silk and other people who buck the company line of the group they belong in, the group that they belong to. I do that. My moniker is putting the Judeo in Judeo-Christian. I'm a very unlikely conservative, and I don't agree with everybody on everything, on everything ever. You know, I do my best to think for myself, and yet I have basic views on certain things, as I hope you do. But when you are brought up in a certain culture, like you happen to be black, and so therefore you have to vote Democrat and you have to be a liberal because, well, all black people do. That's what we're going to be starting with C.J. Pearson. But the Masterpiece Cake Shop is, the decision is critically important, because the only way to protect your freedom is for you to protect mine. That means it's more important for you to tolerate, and I don't mean it in the liberal sense, it's more important for you to tolerate stuff you don't like, but which doesn't affect you, than it is to accept and encourage stuff that you like. So what these guys didn't understand is that law could be turned against them one day. What they did was retaliation. Now, there's a lot to this case, and a lot of people are debating it as to whether or not it really will protect our religious freedom. My sense is there are going to be other cases like this that come up, because we had a very mealy-mouthed court that wanted to straddle the line on certain things. And it's my opinion that we will see these kinds of cases again. However, enough attorneys have been on since 24 hours ago that we will be rejoicing indeed. And I don't share either Jack Phillips's religion or his sentiments, not even close. But we will be rejoicing that Jack Phillips will get to make wedding cakes again. He lost 60% of his business. He had to spend 5 years taking this case, he didn't do it, to the Supreme Court because the lower courts were so vindictive and hostile towards him. I got to tell you, he's a very soft-spoken, quiet man. He just wants to do his business and be left alone. Isn't that, after all, what all of us want to do? And yet the government continues to infringe upon our rights, tells us what we can and cannot do, can and cannot say. When we go that direction, we are doing the antithesis of what our founders intended for us. So it's up to us to stand up against this kind of infringement of government and to stand up for others whom we may not agree with. Now, this is a pure freedom case, in my opinion. Think about this, and then we'll take a break. Isn't it interesting? I have some what I think are kind of nuanced views about abortion. But isn't it interesting that all the rhetoric that the left has used about abortion doesn't seem to apply to any other issue in their life, right? They are freedom lovers when it comes to abortion. They don't want government getting in between them and their doctor. They don't think it's anybody's business what they do with their body. They believe in freedom. But ask them about whether the government should get involved in whether a Christian baker should bake a cake, that's okay for them. So I used to get into this argument with liberals concerning Obamacare, which in my opinion is in effect dead because the individual mandate is gone. Thank God. All right. But I would ask them, why is it, liberal person, that you believe in freedom to have an abortion, freedom to protect your uterus from government intervention, but not your spleen or your lungs or your neck or your back or your any other part of you? It's okay that the government get involved in telling you what surgery you can have. And that discernment is my new favorite word, discernment of issues, of considering each issue separate is what an intelligent adult does. We have an intelligent, not quite yet adult, who's going to be with us right after the break. So when we come back, we will have a chance all the way up to the top of the hour to get to know C.J. Pearson. This is Spouting Off. Stay with us. This is Karen Cataline.
I'm Elaine, a student at Hillsdale College. Here is Hillsdale College President Larry Arnn on the importance of the presidential oath of office.
Members of Congress and federal judges take an oath to the Constitution, but the Constitution prescribes the exact words of the oath only for the president. The American presidency was a new and powerful office created at the Constitutional Convention of 1787. Nothing like it existed in any other constitution in history. It was designed to allow certain virtues, decision, activity, secrecy, dispatch, things like that. And they were thought to be essential to executive power, especially in a crisis. But despite this immense power, the president is not so powerful as the Constitution itself. That is why presidents must pledge to preserve, protect, and defend the Constitution, and why it is the duty of the people to ensure that they do so.
This Constitution Minute was brought to you by Hillsdale College. To join the national conversation on the Constitution, go to constitutionminute.com.
Do you have a secret that's been bothering you? Have you been wondering if what you're thinking or feeling is normal? Is there someone with whom you've needed to clear the air, but you haven't been able to find the right words? Sometimes you need an objective, second opinion to help you see your problem more clearly. Ask Aunt Emma, and she'll help you move past what's getting in your way. She's a former therapist who is wise and caring, but instead of therapy, she'll give you terrific advice. It's free to ask Aunt Emma and explain your need, problem, or question. If you both agree, you pay only $1.39 a minute. It's anonymous, it's confidential, and you'll be surprised at how effective it is. You can ask Aunt Emma by going to facebook.com/askAuntEmma. There, you'll find her phone number and extension number. That's facebook.com/askAuntEmma. Ask Aunt Emma today.
Are you among the millions of Americans who feel uncertain when it comes to their health care? We are happy to inform you that there is a solution, and that solution is Liberty HealthShare. It's a community of like-minded people who work together to pay for their medical costs. You choose your doctor and hospital, starting at $107 a month for a single, up to $449 a month for a family. That's mom, dad, and all kids. For more info, visit libertyhealthshare.org. That's libertyhealthshare.org.
And thank you for staying with us. This is Karen Cataline, and you're listening to Spouting Off. I am delighted to have with us C.J. Pearson, who's the editor-in-chief of cjpearson.org, the national chairman of Teens for Trump, and a leading voice among right-leaning, right-leaning youth in America. His writings have appeared in Time, we got to talk about that, The Daily Caller, The Daily Beast, and lots of other publications. He is not even 16 years old yet, but I've got him and I got all kinds of good questions for him. Welcome to Spouting Off, CJ.
Hey, Karen, thanks for having me. It's a pleasure to be here.
Yes, I actually was trying to get a hold of you or trying to have you on my AM when I was filling in on AM radio, and you were still in school. And it was so great because school came first. You didn't just blow off school so you could be on a faraway radio program somewhere. So now it says you're a sophomore.
Yeah, I know, but I'm glad we're able to make it work.
Yeah, me too. It says you're a sophomore. Are you still a sophomore, or did you finish your sophomore year?
Yes, I finished my sophomore year, and I'll be a junior this upcoming school year.
Wonderful. And you are going to be 16 in about a month, right?
Yeah, in July.
Great. So, even though I have some information on your bio here, I want you to tell everybody, now, how did this bizarre interest, first in politics and then in conservative politics, happen for you? And when did it?
Well, for me, it's kind of, odd. I like to say that, I just have this natural inclination towards it all. I remember, being in second grade, it was the 2008 election, and we had a mock election, and this was in second grade. But our assignment was the same as every other voter who was voting in the actual election. We were to research the candidate, figure out why we should and should not support the candidate, and then at the end of that week, we were going to cast our ballot. I remember watching the debates with my parents. I remember following the election, the newspaper. I remember doing all of that and being completely, just infatuated with the process of it all. And, I remember that week casting my ballot for John McCain. And, the reason I did was largely because of his military service. And, my grandfather served 20 years in the military, so I definitely admire that. sense of service and commitment that John McCain has. So I voted for him over President Obama in that mock election. And since then, you know, I've had the opportunity to work on campaigns to you know, advocate for my personal beliefs of limited government, personal responsibility, and the free market, and so forth and so on. And what I would say is what really sort of brought me into the world of conservative politics was that I just started, you know, kind of thinking about my principles. What did I believe? Did I think that businesses flourish when there was little to any government regulation? Well, when I talked to business owners, that's what they told me. They said that they love hiring people. They love, you know, giving their employees a fair wage, but the reason they weren't always able to was because of burdensome government regulation. And also, I also believe that if people work hard for their money, they should be able to keep most of it. And I think, you know, when it comes to taxes, you know, there's so many people who would rather tax the country into oblivion than rather address the fiscal problems that we have as a nation that continuously are putting my generation's future in jeopardy, you know, spending and not doing what every American family has to do, and budget their money and spend it wisely.
God, that's so good. You said about a half a dozen things that I could ask you about. Which is great. You know, first off, your parents are Democrats, right?
They are.
How avidly Democrat are they?
You know, they're pretty big. They are not, you know, huge fans of this president. And I always say, you know, that makes for interesting dinner time conversation, for sure.
And, so you haven't been able to persuade them yet. Huh?
Oh, I have not. I think they're a little bit too far gone. But what I would say is that I will not stop trying. I am persistent. But no, I definitely kind of admire the fact that we don't agree on politics. I think it certainly exposed me to an alternate viewpoint, and almost all the time, you know, because we live in the same house. It's a house divided, no doubt, not only politically, but also when it comes to college football, too, which is probably even bigger of a divider than politics sometimes. But no, you know, it's been great. You know, I often, you know, kind of hear the other side's arguments, and I can, you know, understand why they feel the way that they do. And another thing that it really has allowed me to do is kind of figure out that, you know, at the end of the day, people on different sides of the aisle, we can disagree on a lot. We can disagree on how to get to certain outcomes, but oftentimes the outcomes that we want are pretty much the same. You know, everyone wants to be able to provide for their family. Everyone wants to see job creation. Everyone wants to see their communities flourish. We just have different ideas on how to get there. And, you know, what I've noticed just in our dinner time conversations is that, you know, there is common ground. It just takes the ability to sit next to each other and just talk it out sometimes, which is, you know, something that we don't see too often in politics. You know, we see it a lot more with President Trump at the helm. You know, he's a businessman. He understands that consensus is the way that we move forward. You've seen that in his interactions with members of Congress on both sides of the aisle, that he will, you know, fiercely advocate for his viewpoints and his policies, all while, you know, seeking to find common ground with people on the other side of the aisle, which I think is crucial if we're going to be, you know, moving forward as a country.
Okay, well, I could debate that with you about common ground with the left, because I don't think they ever give an inch. But there's
yeah,
so many.
I don't
many
think they do, and I don't think
never.
I don't think we should.
They
either.
Never do.
You know. Yeah, and I think the biggest thing is that, you know, when it comes to certain issues, I think, like, for example, criminal justice reform. You know, many conservatives, you know, support criminal justice reform because we believe that it's fiscally irresponsible to be locking tons of people away for petty drug offenses, while members of the left support criminal justice reform because they believe it is a remedy towards systemic racism and so forth and so on. You know, we have different reasonings for supporting that thing, but at the end of the day, we still want to see the same thing happen. And so when it comes to issues like that, that's sort of where I'm like, okay, we can work on that. You know, but of course, when it comes to issues like, you know, fiscal conservatism in general, when it comes to things like, you know, lowering the corporate tax rate, ensuring that we can continue to cut burdensome government regulations that stifle economic growth, then there definitely is a difference in policy. And sometimes there isn't any common ground, but I definitely think there is sometimes where we can say, hey, let's stop being so divisive and let's just work together. And but at the same time,
I wish they would do that, but they don't. Yeah.
Yeah, sadly. We live in incredibly partisan times.
Yes, we do. And yeah. Let's not go down that road because we'll never get back out of it again. If I had 3 hours, we would talk about it. I want to drill down. I, you know, among the weird parts of my background, I'm a social worker, right?
Yeah.
And I am utterly, utterly fascinated with what it is that causes a person in a certain environment to go a different way. I'm not one of those people that has ever put Ayn Rand on any kind of pedestal, but I've known people who did. But one of the great stories about Ayn Rand, and she was a brilliant woman, there's no question. She was awfully strange in lots of other ways, but she was Russian, right? And she became one of the greatest voices for free market capitalism in our generation. So that voice inside your head, when you're being indoctrinated, that says, wait a minute, that wait a minute moment. I want to know, were you, I mean, second grade is so incredibly young. Was there somebody who was, who influenced you and who you admired, or was there a wait a minute moment for you?
Yeah. Well, for me, you know, in second grade, it was really when my just in general, you know, I started becoming interested in politics. But, you know, later on, I started following it more closely and really just started doing a self-discovery. You know, I wanted to figure out how I felt about the issues. I wanted to figure out, you know, how I felt about, you know, fiscal issues and how I felt about national security issues. And all it really was just me reading everything that I could get my hands on, you know, reading what politicians on the one side were saying and reading what politicians on the other side were saying. And it was just like, oh my God, I think I'm a Republican, and you know, and that just sort of, you know, clicked
That's
with
wonderful.
Me, and you know, and
see,
since then,
I wish and pray that more people had that incredibly, incredible curiosity of mind and intellect that you clearly have, because when people start to question these things,
I think it's freeing. I think the more that we have people who are willing, you know, just to think for themselves and to go out and to consume every bit of knowledge that they can, you know, it's intellectually freeing. Like you look at, you mentioned Ayn Rand, you know, this is a woman who literally was being indoctrinated left and right. She was literally, you know, in Russia, right? Like, you know, there was no reason for her to want to know anything about the free market system or know anything about the merits of free enterprise or anything like that. But she learned those things and she learned the benefits of it and she became an advocate for it. And it was freeing for her. And I think that's one of the biggest things that we have to realize is that knowledge is empowering. And, you know, oftentimes, you know, people like to put, you know, people of color in boxes and saying, you know, if you're black, if you have a little bit of melanin in your skin, then you have to believe in the Democratic Party. I don't agree with that. I think slavery ended a long time ago. And I think I'm not going to be told how to think and how to believe. And I'll believe how I see fit. And I think what I chose to believe are in the conservative values of limited government, personal responsibility, and free enterprise. If you disagree, that's fine. But what I'm saying is that don't let society tell you that you have to be a Democrat, because you don't.
I am applauding inside my head, but if I went, yay, 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 nobody could hear you. So I'm going, yay, 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 go CJ.
I appreciate
it. And that is, you know, I got to tell you that I have on my Facebook page and on my website this picture that I personally took. I'm very fond of sunflowers. And there's a picture of a sunflower field, a field of sunflowers, in which they're all facing in one direction. And there's one sunflower facing towards the camera. And, you know, I looked for lots of slogans for that picture. I finally set on the slogan or the line, sometimes the crowd is wrong.
Yeah.
You know?
That is very true. And that is very
Not only that, but if you are a champion of independence of thought, even if you disagree with somebody else, you're likely to be a conservative.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't bother me and it doesn't bother you to disagree with people. But somehow the left is constantly putting people in boxes, just as you said. I couldn't say it any better than you do. Let's talk about the fact that someone said that you You hoaxed Obama. This was when you were a lot younger. And then Snopes said the rumors that it was false, that your parents put you up to it. Tell everybody the story about how you hoaxed Obama.
Yeah. So apparently, okay, so as you remember, Ahmed Mohammed, he was the clock boy who built a bomb. Yeah, he didn't build a bomb. He built a clock that looked like a bomb. And then he got invited to the White House and everything.
Right.
And whatnot. And I was like, okay, well, so this is how this works. And so, you know, I said, basically, here's the deal. Let's see how receptive this president is to, you know, a conservative kid, you know, just hearing his viewpoint. And so I did that. And then almost immediately, you know, the liberal media ripped into me, you know, finding every hole in the story, which was the intention, you know, because I knew they were going to do that. The intention was to show that conservative media and liberal media and just the bias of it all. You have an individual who built a clock that looked like a bomb. We live in a post 9/11 world, and he comes in and he does this. He gets all this attention. He gets job offers from Google, you know, and he gets invited to the White House. The red carpet's rolled out. And then, you know, basically no one really doubts his story. No one doubts that he intended to cause that ruckus, even though he had a history of doing stuff like that. But then a conservative does something like that, and then, it's time for private investigations, which was, you know, really amazing to me. And I found that to be quite intriguing, and it proved the point that I was looking to make, that it's not an equal world between conservative figures and liberal figures. And we see that with Roseanne and other colleagues, you know, with Samantha Bee. She called Ivanka Trump something that I'm pretty sure my mom would be very disappointed if I ever repeated, you know. And you know, and then you have Roseanne Barr, you know, being fired, and Samantha Bee getting, you know, the ability to just
Roseanne Barr is not even a conservative. I got to say that for the record.
Yeah.
She's the first. So, she's not a conservative. And yet she's characterized as a conservative simply because she likes Trump.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
How did you get Obama? I can't let this go yet. How did you get Obama's attention? What did you do?
You know, it was crazy. So on Twitter, it just blew up. And then one of his deputy press secretaries, I guess, got wind of the tweet or whatever. And then somehow, somewhere, I guess the president found out about it. And then so from there, you know, liberal media did what liberal media does. They, you know, came coming. Right. It was, you know, entertaining.
Well, what was your tweet, though? What'd you tweet that blew up?
Yeah, it was about President Obama's Twitter blocking me. So basically what happened, you know, and you've heard the stories about, you know, how President Trump blocks people. Well, the thing is that they don't talk about is that President Obama did the same very thing. You know, he blocked tons of conservative accounts. And so, you know, I tweeted that, and then, you know, from there, they came a-coming. It was quite something.
Well, and he's got a friendly, I was going to say, there's a friendly, not only friendly media, but friendly Google and friendly Facebook and friendly Twitter to help him do it.
It's intriguing because these people claim to be, you know, the victims and minorities and whatnot, but when you have the entire weight of corporate America and tech and the media on your side, I'm sorry, but that's not victimhood in my book.
No. And why is it so... why do people want to be victims? This is really about the only thing the Democrats offer is victimhood. Well, you're a victim. You get to be the next victim group. That's what I wrote in my piece about LGBT, the next LGBTQ, and the next big letter in the political alphabet is W for woman. So now they get to be victims too, like everyone else.
Yeah.
I have to ask this sort of obvious question, but I know people really want to know. Maybe they haven't been introduced to your eloquence before, and they're getting to do so now. But people, I'm sure, ask you about the Black community. How can we reach the Black community best? Is there something you can say that we can't say, or what can we say? If we happen to be white, what do we say?
I think the biggest thing is that Black Americans have many of the same concerns as everyday Americans. You know, how are you going to create jobs for me? How are you going to help me provide for my family, put food on the table, put clothes on my family's back? how are you going to help my community thrive? You know, the biggest thing that I always tell conservatives is it is imperative for us to know the culture, to be acquainted with the culture. Far too often I hear conservatives saying, you know, who cares about pop culture? Well, pop culture is very, very influential, incredibly influential. It's exactly why when Kanye West, you know, came out and voiced his support for the president, that President Trump's support among black males doubled after just a tweet. You know, that's insane.
Yeah.
And the biggest thing is that, you know, if you listen to hip-hop, you know, underneath the vulgarities and whatnot, you hear a community of people who are just yearning for economic opportunity, who want that economic prosperity that, you know, is brought about through the free market, through free enterprise, through cutting through those burdensome regulations. And we have a winning message. All it takes is going into the black community saying, hey, Democrats have failed you time and time again. Look at Chicago. Look at Detroit. Look at every inner city across America. Here is my plan. Here is my solution. And here's what I want to do for you. I want to bring jobs here. I want to make sure that your child has a job to go to after they go to school so they're not getting into any trouble. And I want to also ensure that you're able to be the best father, best parent that you can be because you're able to more adequately provide for your family. And here's how I'm going to do this. I'm going to cut taxes so that you have more money in your pocket. I'm going to help jobs, you know, job creators come here to these inner cities, creating jobs, all in the process, also boosting infrastructure. And all of those are conservative solutions that better the everyday lives of the black community. And it's not really about talking about, you know, black issues. It's about talking about the biggest issues on the minds of every American, their money, you know, and their jobs and their ability to provide.
Well, isn't it interesting that the Democrats are doing everything they can to minimize this stunning job news of the Trump administration that
it's
going
dangerous.
To take the 2018 midterms, repeating it every single day and twice on Shabbos, if you're Jewish, that we have the lowest black unemployment rates on record. And we've heard Nancy Pelosi and we've heard all of these bizarre little dwarfs, intellectual dwarfs, telling us that that's not very important. So it used to be that conservatives had a hard time messaging that we respect you enough to let you, not to let you, but we respect you enough to want you to have independence for yourself. They want to keep handing you things to put you on the government plantation. Now it seems that suddenly we've got a Donald Trump who's able to actually communicate that without a lot of political rhetoric. He's just doing it. Mm-hmm. And I thought he would. I knew he would.
And that's huge. That's huge. And a few points to respond to that. You know, number one, the reason they don't want to talk about that is because they realize how freeing it is and how eye-opening it is to countless people of color across this country who are going to start opening their eyes and saying, whoa, you know, this president, they like to call a racist, a bigot, a white supremacist. He actually has done a lot more than me than any other president in modern history. Maybe I should give him a look. You know, that those things are freeing. The, like you said, the black unemployment rate is the lowest it has ever been in our nation's history. Job growth is steady. Wages are rising. Those are facts. Nancy Pelosi can call it anything she wants. I call it winning. And then point number two is also you talk about how they want to continuously keep black people on the government plantation. That's completely true. And the biggest thing that I would say is that I know people that are on welfare, and the biggest thing that they want to do is get off of it so that they can provide for their family. It is degrading to their own pride to just constantly have the government providing for everything. Now, I'm not going to say that everyone on welfare has that same drive and self-motivation, but the vast majority of people on welfare want to thrive. And the biggest thing is if we give them a job, they'll take the job. We just need to make sure that those jobs are in place, and President Trump is doing that. And liberals would love nothing more than to continue to have black people and other people across this country on the government plantation because they become victims.
Absolutely.
And victimhood allows them to control these people. Because, you know, if the government well dries up, then these people are left out to dry. And Democrats know that, and it's a powerful thing, and they like to use that. But the thing is that there are many, many Black Americans who are looking at that jobs report that Democrats don't want to talk about, and they're saying, you know, I'm done with being a victim. I want to be a victor. You know, victorhood over victimhood. I think that's the new mantra.
Touche, CJ. Hey, you should use that as a hashtag. Touche, CJ. Notice the dirty little secret. I was so depressed during the Obama administration. And the dirty little secret is there are so many. Was one of the first things Obama did was quietly take away the job requirement to get welfare. Quietly take away the school choice so that Blacks in inner cities could not have access to the same kind of education as anyone else. I mean, if you look at what he did and not at what he said, it was clear that they had a vested interest in keeping people dependent on government. And I just wonder, you know, other than the obvious, which is Trump is actually doing it, you know, how do we say that? You can't really say it. You just have to do it. Nobody's shown us a better example of how to do it than the guy sitting in the Oval Office right now. It's a blessing.
Yeah, it certainly is, and I think President Trump has given Republicans something to run on, not only in this upcoming midterm election, but also in 2020. You know, this is a huge deal. Yeah. You know, you don't have to go and just talk about what we want to do. Talk about what we have done. You know, we have brought the Black unemployment at the lowest rate it has ever been in history. We see wages rising. We have a president who has pledged to work with historically Black colleges to save them from the precipice of bankruptcy. You know, and that's a really big deal. And I think this is a president who has focused more resources than ever to helping the Black community win again, as he has done with every community across the country, white, Mexican, you name it.
Yeah.
He is helping
it's just
every
so
American
racist,
win
CJ.
Win again.
You know, it's such. It's,
you know,
he's so racist.
I know.
You know, and
he's
anti-Semitic
who has. Yeah.
You know, I mean, terrible, terrible. I have a cartoon on my website that says, yeah, that Trump, he's just like Hitler. That's why he decided to move the U.S. embassy to Jerusalem, because he's such a bad, bad guy. I wanted to mention about immigration and the fact that no wonder the left had to import voters from illegal immigrants, because, you know, the fear was is that Blacks might finally get wise. And meanwhile, when you import illegal aliens, I don't care what their culture is or their language. You know, Mexicans are not a race. They're from a country. Then if you import them, then you are bringing down wages. And so I wonder how many Blacks, number one, have been tried to be conned into accepting these left-wing ideas. One of them, illegal immigration. Another is tolerating gay marriage, which in the Black culture has never been. If you notice, Hollywood, almost every sitcom had a gay Black guy in order to, in my opinion, desensitize the Black community from gays. Now, having been in the theater for many years, I could care less. But I know that there is great hostility, or always historically has been, to gays in the Black culture. So they're always trying to combine these things. What about, you know, climate change? I mean, how many climate change fanatics do you know in the Black community? But yet they tried really hard to combine all these things. So I don't know. There's a lot of manipulation going on here.
Yeah.
Very much
and you
so.
See that. Yeah, yeah, and you see that across the entirety of the culture and pop culture. And this is exactly why I say that it's imperative for conservatives to not ignore pop culture. Because pop culture is powerful. It moves the dial on how society thinks about issues and how certain demographics, you know, feel about certain things. And I think that's exactly why it's so important for us to have the Roseanne shows, you know, that give voice to, you know, an underrepresented class of Americans as it relates to Hollywood and the media and whatnot. And, you know, even, you know, I definitely think what she said was deplorable and wrong, and it's unfortunate that she said those things. At the same time, her show really did give voice to everyday Americans. And it's a shame that she ruined that for herself. But no, seriously, though, at the end of the day, I think that's why it's so important for conservatives to basically say, hey, you know, let's make our own, you know, your answers to what the liberals are doing as it relates to trying to indoctrinate an entire generation of young people, but also try to subconsciously indoctrinate every other American, you know, and whatnot. And I've seen the same exact thing that you just said that you observed seeing. And, you know, it's certainly interesting. I don't know many people of color who are really care all that much about climate change. I don't know many people in general who care that much about climate change except liberal fanatics on Twitter. But,
well, Van,
you know,
Johnson
that,
was employed in the Obama administration in order to combine the black concerns, if you will, in the community with environmental, so that he could combine these giant voting bloc groups. I mean, that is really,
and conservatives, honestly think conservatives should do the same, and they could do the same. Like, you look at immigration. Yeah.
Yes.
And you look at immigration, exactly. You mentioned that, you know, immigration hurts black communities. It helps. It hurts every community of disadvantaged Americans, and also people who are in poverty, people who are, you know, middle class. It hurts every single group of those people. And we just have to go and say, hey, guys, supporting this sort of, you know, broad immigration reform or amnesty does nothing more than hurt you more than you already have been,
and
or
they
more than
have
you believe
to,
you already are.
Yeah, sorry to interrupt. We have to expose the hypocrisy that if these guys are lying to you about this, what else are they lying to you about? We only have a few minutes left. So what are you working on these days? Give us a nice, thorough pitch about what what you're up to, how people, a lot of your followers happen to be listening to us because of you, not because of me. So tell them how they can contact you, what are you working on, and how can we support you, because you are an extremely important voice. Didn't get to even ask you about somebody like David Hogg or any of your contemporaries who are trying to become giant media stars because they're darlings of the left. But go for it. Tell us what we can do.
Well, for me, you know, right now I'm working on summer vacation. So I'll be doing some vacations and whatnot, and just, you know, taking a little bit of time off and whatnot. But, you know, for me, you mentioned David Hogg. You know, basically what my work is going to be is giving a voice to other young conservatives across the country. You know, there have been multiple research studies that show that Generation Z, my generation, generation that succeeds, millennials, is going to be the most conservative generation since World War II. Now, if you watch CNN or you watch the news, you wouldn't think that. You would think that kids like David Hogg are the voice of my generation, that they represent the majority of my generation. But that just isn't true, and I want to definitely present the alternative view, let people know that not every kid my age is a liberal snowflake who needs a safe space or a crime
CJ,
closet.
CJ, you've made my day.
So, you know, that's really what I'm focused on, and I'm excited to keep up the good fight. To fight for a bolder and conservative future. And, you know, to all of your listeners, you can keep up with me. You can visit my website, cjpearson.org, or you can follow me on Twitter at @thecjpearson, and I'm also on Facebook.
You are the best.
I appreciate it.
Support you. I'm going to have you on again, either on here or on AM Talk, wherever. And people are going to know your name. You're just getting started. You are a star in the making, CJ Pearson.
I appreciate it.
Thank you for being with us. I wish I had more time. Thank you for being with us. And for all of you out there, if you'd like to contact me, have thoughts about anything you've heard, you can reach me at www.karencataline.com. Thank you to my producer, Doug, and to BBS Radio. To HW, the multi-talented guy with the IQ greater than that of a small soap dish. And tune in next week when there's going to be a whole lot more, I can guarantee it, a whole lot more to spout off about here on Spouting Off.